Well, congratulations to all dads on Father's Day. We appreciate all of you guys here who are functioning as dads and hope you have a wonderful Father's Day. Fathers have many responsibilities. Perhaps one of the most important of them is to set a good example for their household and particularly for their children. We've probably all heard the old expression, there's more caught than taught. If a father is a bad example of what a Christian ought to be, well, probably then the children's understanding of what Christianity is all about will be skewed or corrupted or wrong in one way or another. If the father sets a good example, it's likely, although we recognize it's not guaranteed, but I think it is likely that if the father sets a good example for his children, it's more likely that the children will follow that example. It's not guaranteed that that's going to happen, but most times it works out that when especially mothers and fathers set a good example for their children follow in their steps. In the New Testament, we find many exhortations for us to follow others or to follow the example of our leaders. Let me just run you through several passages in the Bible that talk about how important it is to follow examples. 1 Corinthians 11:1 says, "Be ye followers of me, even as I am also of Christ." Ephesians 5:1, "Therefore be imitators of God as dear children." 1 Thessalonians 1:6 and 7, "You became followers of us and of the Lord. You became examples to all in Macedonia and Achaia." 2 Thessalonians 3:9, "We make ourselves an example that you should follow us." Hebrews 6:12, "Imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." And then 1 Peter 5:3, "Be examples to the flock." So we see this language of being an example, setting an example, others following you, you following others. Part of the Christian life is exactly what 1 Corinthians 11 says, follow somebody as they follow Christ. And of course, the problem can be if the blind follow the blind, where are they going to wind up? In the ditch. So we don't want to follow the blind blindly into sin and error and corruption. But we do want to follow others as they follow Christ. And we follow others to the degree, to the extent that they follow Christ. And all Christians, Christian fathers, and of course mothers as well, but we're talking about fathers this morning, all Christian dads should be able to say to their children and to the rest of their family, follow me as I follow Christ. When I fall short of that, don't follow me. But if I'm following Christ, then follow my example. And all Christian fathers ought to be trying to provide that example for their family and particularly for their children. Perhaps there's no more important relationship in which to set a good example than fatherhood. Children need a good example to follow. And of course, children are very influenceable. I mean, their primary influence for children is their parents. And probably among the parents, oftentimes at least, the father is the most important figure for those children to follow. Setting a good example is important for both parents, of course, but the father in particular, I think, sets the tone for his household. He's the leader of the household, or he should be. And so that man has to set the tone. He has to set the example. He has to be the leader in his household. So it's critically important that fathers set the best kind of example as they can. Now, nobody's perfect. We're not saying that fathers are ever going to come up to the standard. We all fall short of the glory of God. So we're not saying that we have unrealistic expectations for dads or fathers in the household. But to the best of their ability, they ought to be striving to set that good example for their children so that they can say, follow me as I follow Christ. Well, there's a particular passage in the Bible that we haven't read yet. It's 1 Timothy 4:12. We're going to be looking at that passage in particular this morning. The other passage that we read a moment ago talks about setting an example and following an example. But the primary text we're going to be looking at this morning is 1 Timothy 4:12. "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, and in purity." Timothy, as you may remember, was a young pastor serving in Ephesus, and Paul had left him there as kind of an apostolic representative. But sadly, Timothy apparently was a young man, and apparently the people there at the church were not really following his lead so much. So Paul has to say, "Let no man despise thy youth." He's probably not, a young teenager or something. He's probably in his 30s. But from the Jewish culture, he's still a young man, and apparently the people there were not taking him too seriously. So Paul says, set an example for these people. He gives Timothy then six areas of life to set the example. Now, we know that Timothy, you know, this is not talking about fathers with their children. This is talking about a young pastor setting the example for his church. And I'm using that as sort of a pattern, just like a pastor should try to set a pattern for the church, set an example for the church. I'm sort of extrapolating that a little bit to say fathers are sort of in a similar position. A pastor is the leader of the flock, as you might say, and the father in the household is the leader of his little flock, his little patrol, his little troop there. And so the father should be able to set the example for his family, just like a pastor would set the example for his congregation. So using that as an example, set an example, be an example in these six areas of life, using that as a pattern for what fathers ought to be, let's look at these six areas of life in which fathers ought to be striving to set an example. So first of all, he says, be an example of the believers in word. The first area of setting an example is word. Fathers should set the example in their language. Words, of course, are very important. The Bible says, Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. So your words express what's inside of you. And so Paul tells us likewise to speak the truth in love. James says that our tongues are like a rudder of a ship. Even though it's a little member, it does great things. The words that we say can be like a spark that sets a huge fire. So our words are very important, and we need to be very careful about how we use them. Ephesians 4:29 says, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace to the hearer. So to be edifying with our language means to build up. Doesn't mean that you're just constantly throwing compliments all the time, but the language that we use is building up rather than tearing down. So the Bible tells us many things about the quality of our speech. And so at home, as we are the men here trying to set a good example for the families, we need to set that good example in the language, the words that we use. I came from a Christian home, and I don't ever remember my dad saying any swear words or using any kind of foul language. I remember my grandpa did one time that I can remember. That was my dad's dad, and he was kind of an old, curmudgeonly 80-year-old or so at the time. And I remember him asking me or telling me to wash his car and get some of the stuff off of the car, and he used some sort of barnyard language. And I remember being very shocked and surprised to hear my grandpa use inappropriate language, because nobody in our household used that kind of language. In fact, my dad was such that he would get kind of upset if we were watching TV, and back in the 70s and 80s, they might use a swear word, and my dad would always kind of go, boy, I wish they wouldn't use that kind of language on TV. Or he would always make a comment whenever they used an inappropriate or a swear word or a vulgar word on TV. And we made sure in our household that we didn't use those words. In fact, my mom washed out my mouth with soap one time because I used a word that I don't remember what the word is now, but I probably picked it up on the playground or something like that. We weren't even allowed to say, now little children, shut your ears. We weren't allowed to say shut up. That was a word, don't say shut up. So, my parents were fairly strict on language that we could and could not use at home. And I think that set a good example for me. You know, sometimes I'm out and about and you hear little children, you probably hear little children occasionally, using really foul language. And you wonder, what in the world is going on at these people's homes when these children out at Walmart or out at the shopping center are using this kind of foul language? And sometimes the parents laugh about it as if it's cute. Oh, here's little Johnny or Susie, 5-year-old, using this sailor's language, language that used to not be even heard in polite company. And here's a little 5 or 6-year-old spouting off this kind of wicked language. And the parents are laughing about it. Well, that's the kind of culture in which we live today. But hopefully the use of profane and vain language, vulgar language in our homes, is not something we tolerate. And that would be where the father of the household has to put his foot down and be the example, set the example, and defend or make sure that the proper way of speaking is done in his household. Men are often rather harsh and demeaning in their language. Maybe you come from a household and maybe the father says, okay, we're not going to have any vulgar language. There's not going to be any swear words. But still, men can use harsh and demeaning and even humiliating language from time to time. As I said, I don't remember my dad ever saying any foul language, but I do recall some times where he used language that was kind of demeaning or humiliating. I remember several times doing really stupid things when I was a kid, and my dad would call me dummy or stupid. Well, I was a stupid dummy, that's true, but my dad didn't need to call me names. Children call children names, but fathers don't need to call their children names. I mean, they should have loving names and names that show appreciation, maybe a nickname or something like that. But we don't need to use names that degrade or demean or humiliate our children. That's almost, you know, today they'd call that bullying. We don't need to bully our children. We can reprimand them. We can reprove and rebuke them without using the language that is harsh and humiliating. Why do I remember that my dad called me a dummy? Well, it made an impression on me, I guess, when I was a little kid. So he never used foul language, never used swear words, but he used some words that now, looking back on it, I would say that was inappropriate for a grown man to use for a young child. So fathers, again, I think need to be very careful about the kind of language that we use with our kids. We can be strict disciplinarians, we can reprove and rebuke, and yet not use the kind of language that would be inappropriate. So fathers should seek to set an example of godly language in the home, language that edifies, builds up, and conveys grace. And we need to be very careful to do that. Remember that your children will probably follow the example of speech that you use. So use language that builds up and not tears down. Secondly, fathers should seek to set the example in conduct. Here in the King James, it says conversation. In word, in conversation. Conversation, though, in this case, as you probably know, means conduct or manner of life. It means your behavior. So children should be able to follow the example of the behavior of their father. Christian fathers need to model the kind of behavior that they want to instill in their children. Now, the Bible says an awful lot about behavior. So I thought, what's one passage that really kind of condenses or summarizes the kind of behavior that would be true or should be true of Christian fathers? And I thought, well, the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Well, if that kind of behavior would exemplify the Christian father, well, that would be the kind of conduct that you would want to use before your family. When it comes to proper behavior, fathers must both set the example and enforce the example. Your children should have no confusion about what is proper behavior. Now, as they grow up, as they're very little children, sometimes they don't know right from wrong. And guess who's supposed to instill that within them? The parents. The father, of course, is to bring the child up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. There is discipline that goes on, and part of this discipline process is to show those children right from wrong. We appreciate and we value when they do the right thing, and we discipline them when they do the wrong thing. So we instill within them their understanding of right and wrong and what is proper and improper behavior. Well, you know, it's easy for us as parents to tell the child what to do, even in areas when we're not doing that. What do we call it when we tell the child, do what I say and not what I do. It's like a family that I knew several years ago who was trying to warn their children not to smoke, all the while puffing away in cigarettes. Don't do this, puff, puff, puff. Don't do what I'm doing. Well, the children recognize hypocrisy. They can sniff out hypocrisy from 100 yards. And if they see hypocrisy in your life, they're going to think that this is all just a sham. It's just an act that you're putting on. It's just a facade. It's just in front, and you don't really live that way. I remember I worked with a farmer one summer years ago, and I think it was in 7th or 8th grade. And the farmer that I worked with was a good man, a Christian man, but he had a temper problem. He had a real problem controlling his temper. And sometimes if things were not going well on the farm, as life on the farm often doesn't go so well, this man would not act so much like a Christian when he was frustrated or angry with something, or with the, you know, his kids or the people like me that he was working with. And if we did something stupid or wrong or whatever, he would all of a sudden not act so much like a Christian. And I think, you know, people could see that because, you know, he claimed to be a Christian. He went to church. Everybody knew him as a Christian. But when he blew his top, he was not acting a whole lot like a Christian. And so people could sense the hypocrisy in that man. And, of course, children can sense that as well. You know, we claim to be Christian. We claim to know the Lord and love the Lord and serve the Lord and do things biblically. And then we blow our top or have a temper tantrum or something. Something happens and all of a sudden we're not acting biblically anymore. Well, that's what we need to avoid as Christian men, as fathers. We need to try to provide that example consistently. We need to control ourselves because we know that little Johnny and Susie is watching us and we want to set a good example for them. We don't want them to get the idea that this whole Christianity thing is just a show, it's just a fraud, it's just a front that we're putting on, it's just religion. We don't really live this way at home. We go to church and we put on this front, we live this way out in the community, but when we get at home, it all just goes down the tubes. Well, that's not what we want to share with our children. We want them to see a consistently godly manner of life. We want our children to accept and adopt our manner of life. And that's what we do by setting a good example for our children. We want to exemplify how we want them to live. Thirdly, fathers should set an example in love. And here the King James uses the word charity, but the original word is agape. You know that word is just Christian love. Love in this case is not a romantic or a sentimental feeling. Love is doing what's best for the other person. I think that's a very good way to define what Christian love is, doing what's in the best interest of the other person. Somebody defined Christian love as, quote, the settled purpose of will involving the whole person in seeking the well-being of the other. So what is Christian love? Seeking the well-being of the other. Even if the other doesn't know, it's in their best interests. If you've got somebody rushing toward a bridge that's out or toward a cliff or something that they're going to fall over, what's the best thing to do? To warn them about that. That's what we do in salvation. When we warn people about the judgment to come and the perils of going to hell, we're warning them not to go to hell. We're warning them that they can be saved from that eternal death, the second death. And so it's in the best interest of that person to turn from their sin and trust in Christ. And likewise, it's in the best interest of our family to follow the Lord and to live biblically and to honor God with our lives. And so that's what we're trying to instill within our children. How do we demonstrate love? Is it simply kissing the child on the cheek before he or she goes to bed? Well, how do we demonstrate that? Well, of course, you fulfill your biblical responsibilities. That's how you do what's in the best interest of your child. So what are the biblical responsibilities for husbands and fathers? Well, provide for and protect is one. 1 Timothy 5:8, if any man provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel, worse than an unbeliever. So one of the main responsibilities for Christian men, and particularly fathers, is to provide for their families and to protect them. Discipline is an aspect of love. Hebrews 12:6 through 8, whom the Lord loves, he chastens. He scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? And so when the parents, and particularly the fathers, are raising those kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, that requires both verbal and sometimes physical discipline. I think I've told the story before about when I was a kid playing out in the road in front of our house, and my dad came down that road with his big truck, and he almost hit me with his truck, and he proceeded to get out of the truck and hit me with his hand because it was in my best interest not to play in the street. Now, if you have a dog or a cat that you don't care anything about, what do? You just let him go. If you want to play in the street, go ahead. If you want to go over to the neighbor's dog and fight with him, go ahead. But if you care about your pets or your kids, you discipline them so that they don't play in the street in front of your house. You have to show love through discipline. Another thing that we have to do is to raise our kids, as we've said, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Fathers, this is the particular responsibility, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And I would have to say that I think my parents, as much as they could, they did that with me and my sisters. They tried to raise us in a godly way. We show appropriate affection. This is the agape love. This is the charity or the love that we're supposed to have to show our children appropriate affection. Children need to feel affection from their fathers. I think that's particularly true of girls. Girls need fathers at home to show them affection. We all know that if girls don't get that fatherly sense of affection, oftentimes as they grow up and grow older, they start seeking male affection elsewhere. And so fathers need to show and demonstrate their affection for their little girls. At our house, occasionally, we hear the song, "I Want to Marry Daddy When I Grow Up." Have you heard that? It's a Patch the Pirate song. And it's a little girl singing about how she loves her daddy. And that's entirely appropriate for a little, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-old girl to think about her daddy in terms of, "I want to marry you when I grow up." They don't understand the ins and outs of marriage and everything. But if they were to think about the kind of person that the little girl wants to marry, it'd be just like dad. Well, that's what we ought to be. We ought to be the kind of person that our girls are looking for in a marriage partner. Just somebody, maybe not exactly like dad, but somebody much like dad. Somebody who follows that same pattern or example. And of course, boys need that affection as well. Boys especially need their fathers to show how to be a man and how to fulfill their biblical responsibilities. Lack of that father in the household is a major problem within our society. In some minority communities, 75 to 80% of the households are women without men or women without husbands in the household. So we know that some of the real social problems that we have today are based on the fact that men are not doing their responsibilities or fulfilling their obligations. So we have to show that love and affection for our children at home. And the modern sense of love and affection from a worldly point of view is what? For their children. Just let them do whatever they want to do. Give them whatever they want. No discipline, no rebuke, no chastisement. Just the child becomes the center of attention for the home. And so everything revolves around that child, and whatever the child wants to do, that's what the family is going to do. Well, we need to recognize that the loving thing, remember, what's in the best interests of the child, is not simply giving in to the child every time that he or she wants something. The children need to know the most important part of that family relationship is actually the mom and dad. Mom and dad and their relationship is central. And the kids, you know, they function in a lower position. Unfortunately, there are many families that orient everything toward the children. Whatever the children want, we're going to do that. Well, I think that children recognize love and affection if they're actually not the center of attention, that the husband and wife are the center. So love is doing what's best for your children. Christian parents know what is best, and the best interests of the children is that they obey their parents. And one other thing I thought, as long as I'm talking about this idea of the father knowing best. Today in our society, there's such an orientation toward children that if the children or the child comes up with some wacky idea, the parents sort of are forced to go along with it. And in our context today, the whole LGBT thing comes up with a child being confused about its orientation. And society and doctors and the so-called experts telling the parents, just go along with the weird, wacky ideas that your child comes up with. Where a Christian father ought to say, listen, I know what's in your best interest, little child, little 10, 11, 12-year-old person. And although you may have some confused ideas about this, I'm going to tell you what you are. You are a boy or you are a girl, and there's no confusing of that. And if you're confused about that, I'm not confused about that, and I'm going to tell you that if you're a girl, you're going to dress and act like a girl, and if you're a boy, you're going to dress and act like a boy, and you can do something different when you leave my home, perhaps, but there should be no confusion among the parents about who that child is and what its point in life is. And so many parents are like, they come across as if, well, the child is confused about this. The child thinks that he's a girl, so I guess we have to go along with this. Well, what happened to the father? What happened to the mother? What happened to the idea that the father knows best and the parents are there to do what's in the best interest of the child? Well, let's lop off body parts because the child thinks that he's a girl or the girl thinks that he's a boy. Okay, give him to the surgeon. Lop off whatever you need to lop off. Good grief. What's wrong with those parents? So fathers have the obligation to know what is best for their children and do what is best. Insist on what is best for your children. And sometimes what's best is discipline. Sometimes what is best is, you know, whatever, providing, you know, whatever. But hopefully if there's a Christian father in the household, you know what is best. You should know what is best because the Bible tells you what is best and common sense tells you what is best. And so pursue what's best for your child in spite of what the child may be confused about all kinds of things. Other people in the world may be confused about all kinds of other things. But a Christian father doesn't have to be confused. He knows what's best for his own child, and he should not allow some government interference or interference by so-called experts or philosophies or whatever. You got to take a stand and be a man in the household to do what's best for your kids. That is love. Christian love is doing what's best. So do what's best, and then show that loving affection as well. Set that affectionate tone for your children. Fourthly, fathers should set an example in spirit, in word and conversation, in charity, in spirit. Now, what does that mean, spirit? We can take spirit a couple of different ways, but I believe the spirit that's mentioned here is not the Holy Spirit. It's an inner enthusiasm, I would say, for the things of God. Set a good example in your good attitude about the things of God. You know, Bible reading, prayer, going to church. If you are kind of non-committal about these things, you're very sort of casual about the things of God, well, guess how your kids are going to be? Oh, if we feel like going to church on Sunday, we'll go to church. If we feel like reading the Bible, we'll read the Bible. If we feel like, you know, doing the right thing, maybe we'll do it. Everything is kind of casual and, you know, fly by the seat of your pants. But that's not the way that it ought to be. Parents have to show this leadership, and particularly fathers should show interest, enthusiasm for the things of God. So set a good example. Lead in prayer. You know, ensure that the children attend church and Sunday school and youth group activities. Because if the father doesn't make that a priority, well, then probably the rest of the parents won't either. And again, going back to the example of my dad had a high priority that we would be in church every time the doors were open. Even if we were traveling on vacation or going and coming from one place to another, almost inevitably we would find a place to go to church. I remember many occasions when we would be out visiting or doing something on a Sunday afternoon, and we would get back into town. Even after the church service started, we would still go to church. It might be halfway done. We would still go to church and go and sit down in the back until the service was over. If we were on vacation, if we were with family elsewhere, we went to church. If it was a Sunday, that was just a priority with my parents. If the doors were open, if there was a service for us to attend, we attended the church. And so that was a good example for me. And so when I got out on my own and I didn't have to go to church, there's a little bell ringing in my brain, a little voice saying, you need to go to church because that's what your parents taught you. That was the example that they set. So I knew my dad's attitude toward the things of God, and that rubbed off on me. Father should also set an example in faith, it says here. I think the sense of this word is faithfulness. Faith, of course, you know, saving faith, but I think the sense here is to be faithful, trustworthy, reliable, loyal, committed to the things of God. And, of course, a mark of genuine salvation is just that, faithfulness. It's required in stewards that a man be found faithful. And faithfulness is persevering in the faith, continuing on in spite of the difficulties, in spite of the hardships. We continue on in faithfulness following the Lord. And so Christian fathers show that they trust God, put God center in their lives, follow the Lord in spite of hardships and difficulties, and be faithful to God. It's sad that in many homes, the father is not the primary spiritual leader in the household. The father maybe the head of the household in other ways, but when it comes to being an example of faith, well, in a lot of cases, the father kind of bows out. He's not available. The father either has no faith or is rather weak in the faith, or he neglects the faith, and so he leaves all that spiritual stuff up to his wife. And of course, you know, if the father doesn't do it, then the wife has to step in and do that responsibility, and that is what she has to do. But all things being equal, the father should be the spiritual leader along with the wife or the mother, and those two should lead the household together instead of, you know, sort of being on different pages there. So Christian fathers are obligated to set the standard of faithfulness for their households and especially for their children. There's a wonderful passage in Genesis 18. Speaking of Abraham, this is what God says: I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. So notice the language there. I know Abraham, he will command his children and his household. Boy, that sounds pretty authoritarian. And in our society today, the last thing you want to be is a authoritative kind of a person. And so everything is very hands-off. Well, what do you want to do, Johnny and Susie? You know, would you like to go to church today? Would you like to have this? Do you want to eat your asparagus and Brussels sprouts? Or do you want to just eat ice cream? You know, there's so much deference to the children that parents these days don't command their children in their household. But I believe, biblically speaking, as a Christian man, Christian men have the right and responsibility to do exactly that. Command your children and your household. And so many times Christian fathers, or fathers in general, I would say, are just absent. They're afraid of commanding their children. Here's what I've seen many times. Susie, would you like to eat this for lunch? Would you like to come and do this? Could you do this for me? Would you please do this? And so the parents end up, you know, inviting their children and asking their children and hoping that their children are going to do something. And then the child says, no. What do you mean, no? You're not, well, now what am I going to do? And then they refuse to discipline the child. So what a mess. Instead, you command the child to do what it's supposed to do. And if it refuses to do that, you discipline. Simple as that. The child refuses. The child, you know, we would say, delayed obedience is what? Disobedience. If it's delayed, you discipline. You tell the child what to do. If he or she understands it and refuses to do it, discipline immediately. And that's what we do with all our girls all the time. They're messing up all the time. We have to spank them every day. Yeah. Not really. But that's what we expect. We tell the child what to do, and we expect the child to obey. And if the child doesn't obey, then there's going to be discipline. It doesn't have to be a big, you know, hairy deal every time. But, you know, the parents are in charge. You command your children, and you expect them to obey. And you demand, as it says here, righteousness and justice. The father in the household sets this tone. He says, this is how our household is going to operate. I'm going to demand that this is the way it's going to be. Now, you don't have to be a big authoritarian tyrant to do this. You're a godly man who loves your wife and your children. But still, there's got to be some authority there, and the man has to enforce that this is the way it's going to be. It's just like Joshua. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That's the way it's going to be. If you don't like it, hit the road. You know, that's kind of a stern way to be. But this is the way this household is going to operate. And as long as you're under the roof, my roof that I provide, then you're going to operate this way too. And so that's kind of stern, but I think that's the proper way to be with your household. You command them, and we are going to keep the way of the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And this is what a Christian man does. So the primary example for the children's faith is the faith of their father. So make sure that your children can follow your example of faith. Set that tone, set that example of faith for your children. And then finally, fathers should set the example in purity. That's the last word here, purity. And of course, that's talking about moral purity. Our society is becoming less pure all the time. We're surrounded by immoral people doing immoral things, and it's getting worse and worse. Over the course of my lifetime, which is coming up on 60 years now, I've seen the society and the moral component of our society just go down the tubes, worse and worse and worse. You know, when I was a kid watching the Dick Van Dyke Show on TV, you know, the two characters had separate beds. They didn't even use the word pregnant on TV. So how things have changed since the time when I was growing up, and it's getting worse and worse. Of course, we're today in what month? What month is it? It's not June anymore. Now it's what? Pride month. What are we so, you know, we talked about pride as one of those deadly sins, and yet we live in the kind of society that trumpets and lifts up and exalts this idea of a shameful way of life. The whole LGBT experience is a shameful way to live. And yet our society today is trumpeting and promoting this. And we're expected to join the bandwagon. We're expected to do the same. And so our culture is so immoral today. And so the Bible tells us to keep ourselves pure in mind and body. And so fathers must set that example of moral purity. Moral purity is perhaps one of the most important virtues to maintain within the household. Ephesians 5:3. Fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not once be named among you as becometh saints. This kind of thing should not be within our households. This kind of fornication or uncleanness, our children should be innocent of those kinds of things. You know what I mean? We have to try to maintain our children's innocence. They say today, I think I heard this statistic, that the average experience or the average exposure to pornography now is about 10 or 11 years old. Typically kids out in the world today, or even earlier than that, 9, 10, 11 years old is when kids have their first exposure to pornography. And that's largely because our society is so pornographic, and of course kids have smartphones and things where they can get their hands and their eyes and their minds on any kind of filth that you can think about. So I think fathers have to be particularly vigilant today to be the gatekeepers and to try to keep this immoral content as much as possible away from their kids. It's going to be hard. I mean, they're going to find this stuff out. Just you go down the street and there's billboards, you know, and any kind of sporting event or any kind of media, they're going to have some kind of wickedness in there. And so it's pretty hard to shield our children from this thing altogether. But as much as we can, Christian fathers have to try to prevent this kind of, you know, uncleanness or fornication. That kind of stuff should not even be named within our households. It's not that we can't discuss some of these issues. And as children get older, obviously you have to discuss some things to warn them about the ways of the world. And they, you know, they need to know the facts of life and everything like that. But that should come from their parents. Maybe I shouldn't say, but I didn't learn the facts of life from my parents. I learned from a friend. He told me how it all worked. My parents didn't tell me that. That's a shame. That is terrible. Your parents have to relate that kind of information. You know, the father should have that talk with his son, and the mother should have that talk with the daughter. They ought to learn that stuff at home in a good environment where you can discuss it freely and pass on the true information and the wisdom that you have as parents to your children. So the morality of that situation, you know, you've got to protect the morality. Now, it's sad that many fathers today do not lead a morally pure lifestyle. Some fathers out in the world today have multiple children from multiple women, none of whom they ever marry. Some fathers are addicted to pornography, and that creates all kinds of problems within the home. And so it's so sad today that many men out in the world today have so little commitment to moral purity. But Christian fathers must be exemplary in moral purity. They must conduct themselves with high moral standards and insist that their children conduct themselves with high moral standards. They have to be the moral gatekeepers of the home. They should set the standards for entertainment, media, music, recreation. They should make sure that the immoral things of our culture do not penetrate or penetrate as little as possible into our households. And so set the moral example at home and demand that children behave themselves according to biblical morality. If we have high moral standards and set those standards for our children, well, maybe they will follow that example. And so one of the most important things that a father does for his children is to set an example, to provide an example to follow in language, in conduct, in love, in attitude, in faithfulness, and moral purity. If these things are important to the fathers, well, then they're probably going to be important to the children as well. Now, we know that in spite of the father's best efforts, sometimes children will refuse to follow your example. I mean, you could try to lay down the best example in the whole world. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the child is going to follow that example. You can't control how your children are going to follow your example, but you can control whether you set a good example. At least in the future, they can't say, they can never charge you with being a bad example or with being a hypocrite. They're never going to say, well, I didn't follow Christianity because my dad was a hypocrite. I didn't follow Christianity because my dad said one thing and did something else at the home. They can't charge you with that if you've been consistent in your example. Now, again, nobody's going to be perfect, but if the child decides not to follow Christianity, they shouldn't be able to pin the blame on you as a Christian man because you blew it. Now, again, we all blow it from time to time, but still, by and large, our lives should be consistent enough so that our children can't say that they've rejected the Christian life and faith because of the poor example that we set. So our hope and trust is that if we set a good example for our children, they will follow that example themselves. And so with God's help and relying upon His grace, Christian fathers must strive to set a good example for their families. Today is Father's Day, and if your dad is a good example, you should be very thankful. Many children don't even have a father in the household, and many children do not have a father who sets a good example. So if you do have a godly father in the household who sets a good example for you, you should be thankful, and I hope you express your appreciation for him today. Perhaps the best thing that Christian fathers can do for their children is to live the principle of 1 Corinthians 11:1, follow me as I follow Christ. And I think if fathers would set that as our goal, we would find great benefits for ourselves and our family. So let's close in prayer. Dear Lord, I do pray.